Thank you. Today I'll be talking about a recently completed pilot study where we used explored the use of computer simulation to reduce secondhand smoke exposure for children. The intervention was focused on the automobile setting. No relationships. So first off, just the significance of exposure in vehicles for secondhand smoke exposure. We know that low-income persons are the most likely to not have smoking bans in cars as well as homes. Some of the recent data I've seen show that between a third and a half of family automobiles in the United States are potential sites for children's exposure. And children are particularly susceptible to a lot of acute health effects. I mean, there are long-term health effects, but they're very susceptible to, you know, coughing, wheezing, respiratory problems, infections, ear infections, exacerbation of asthma. So, in light of this, we really should be looking for some effective interventions to protect children from secondhand smoke exposure, especially in the automobile. Past work has tended a lot to look at, to focus the intervention on the smoker, to look at cessation and stopping the smoking. Our approach is a little different. We focus more on the smoke and the people who are being exposed by the smoke, working ways to convince people to get onto the road of reducing their child's exposure and ultimately to stop smoking. So it's kind of a little bit more of an indirect route towards cessation, but that is really the final goal. A lot of these secondhand smoke interventions are focused on getting feedback, rapid feedback if possible, to the to the family and the smokers and the non-smokers, sometimes using cotinine, airborne nicotine, intensive counseling. And there's been sort of a mixed record here. Some of these have been shown to be effective in reducing exposure for the child and some not. So we're looking at a little bit of a different way to set up an intervention for secondhand smoke. So this talk will consider four parts. I'll be looking at some of the science that's supporting the intervention for the car setting, and then how we package that science into specific messages that will go into the intervention. And then I'll talk about what the intervention is, what it looks like, and most importantly, how we evaluated this intervention in two medical clinics, one in Stockton, California, and one in Lexington, Kentucky. So first off, we did a few years ago a study at Stanford University where we intensively studied the air exchange rate in automobiles for different speeds, different window positions, different ventilation positions. So we were able to get a really good idea for how much air is moving in and out of a car for a wide range of situations. In this same study, we hired a couple smokers to drive around in a car. And under similar conditions as we used for the air exchange rate, we had them smoke cigarettes, different speeds, window positions, ventilation. So what we found, as you might imagine, so it's really smoky in these cars. It is really a bad environment. But to put some numbers on that, here's some plots of the time series of particulate matter that we measured in the cars. And you can see the peaks going up and down. On the far left is really the worst case scenario where you'd have all the windows closed and you're driving down the road. We get something like 3,000 or 4,000 micrograms per meter cubed. Now, this may not mean something to everybody, so I put a red line on this plot showing the US EPA hazardous level on their index chart for particulate matter. This isn't precisely designed to be used for tobacco smoke, but it gives an idea of how bad smoke is getting in the car. For example, if you were downwind from a forest fire, you would get up to this hazardous level for a daily outdoor level. So we're up about five times about that amount when you have the doors, the windows closed, but still driving down. And you can see, you know, it goes down as you open windows. You'd expect it to go down and get cleaner, but we're still breaching that hazardous level. So this is a bad situation. What we want to do with these data is to generalize them and to come up with a model which we can use in our intervention to educate people and to inform them in real time what exposures are going on in a car for all possible types of ventilation, window, and speed conditions in that car. So we fit a mass balance model to the data. As you can see, it works pretty well. So we were able to use this model then to predict, to simulate a concentration in a car for any type of condition you might face. Now, how are we going to package all these data into an intervention, something we can use to educate people, to inform them, help them visualize what is really going on, how bad the smoke is getting in the car. One example of this was a demonstration I did in California a couple of years ago when they were passing their no smoking in cars with minors law. So, and you get a $200 fine or something if you're caught smoking in your car. So they had a big press event, and they had somebody smoke in the car. We had a video that showed them us driving around with the window open. And the levels were shown in real time on two big LCD monitors, which were color-coded according to the air quality index chart. So good is green at the bottom, and then as it moves up to purple and maroon, it's getting pretty smoky and hazardous in there. But we had to come up with actually another level because it got so bad in the car. They didn't have this level on the EPA chart, so we came up with the very hazardous, the gray level. And so as it gets into the gray level, that just we say it's off the charts. And you can see within only about 10 or 12 seconds, you get, after the cigarette has started, the levels in the car are at that very hazardous level. And furthermore, when the smoker stops, it takes a long time. It takes, even if the windows are open and you open the door wide, it will take 15 or 20 minutes for all that smoke to be removed from the car. And that's another important message we want to convey in the intervention. Lastly is the third-hand smoke issue. Is everybody aware of third-hand smoke? Most people? It's contamination of the surfaces. So you could have off-gassing of a lot of these toxic pollutants, or you could have children touching the surfaces, putting their hands in their mouth. So that's another route to get for children to be exposed to the toxic chemicals in tobacco smoke. So these are the messages that we want to get across in the intervention. That the tobacco smoke levels rise extremely rapidly in the car to very high levels, even with the windows open. It will stay inside for a very long time, and the residue will stay in the car even when no smoking is going on, exposing the child at a later time. So what did we do with these messages and all the science? We came up with the simulation, an interactive animation, where we had the user would sit down at a computer and will be able to interact with the mother character, pressing buttons, just having her smoke, having the car speed go up and down, opening and closing windows different amounts, turning on the air conditioning and the ventilation. And then we have what we call the smoke-o-meter in the bottom that shows the actual levels going up, just like in that demonstration we did in California that shows the color-coded levels of smoke in the car. And as the smoke starts getting bad, as she starts lighting up, we see direct evidence of acute health effects, coughing, rubbing eyes, wheezing. As the smoke gets really bad, the child turns blue. And when this happens, we have a little helper character, a guiding character, who will pop in and direct the user, the mother, in the virtual simulation to work towards reducing the exposure for the child, to drive home these messages that this smoke got high really fast and you need to open a window to get it out, or you need to, turn on the ventilation or stop smoking in the car. And that's actually one of the last things we suggest, but it dawns on them, oh yeah, I'll just put the cigarette out. Yeah, of course, because they're smoking, opening the window, and the levels are still rising and rising, a little bit less, but they're still going up. And finally they realize, oh, I just need to stop smoking and that'll solve everything. So what we did is we took this intervention, this simulation, and we put it into play in two sites in Stockton and Lexington, Kentucky, where we tested it in the medical clinic waiting rooms in a kiosk format, where we had testing pre and post, we had a case and control group. The case got the full simulation. The control group sat down at the kiosk and went through sort of a slideshow, a narrated slideshow with all the same key messages that people were given in the simulation, but they did not participate in the interactive part. So we're looking at the basic feasibility and acceptability of this technology in a waiting room area, as well as what people learned, what they retained over time, and some indication, initially of if there's any behavior change or intended behavior change. So here's some snaps of a kiosk in a waiting room. It was pretty easy for people to come in and watch their kid play or have them sit next to them while they were using it, or if they brought in their family, someone would watch them while they were using the kiosk. We found that it really wasn't much of a problem. We had about 150 eligible people who were smokers and with children, but we also had a knowledge group. We had a lot of people use it just to give us general usability feedback. The bulk of people were Caucasian, Latino, or African American. So some results of this, basically we had universally positive response. Everybody liked it, they could use it, they felt like the kiosk in the waiting room was a good idea. You know, people felt it was a compelling way to learn about secondhand smoke in general. We almost had no negative comments about it. Quantitatively, it was a little hard to get some quantitative results, but we had a pre-post test, so these bars show the percentage of people who strongly agreed with a certain statement. And the top statement is smoke can be as bad as that on a very polluted day, a smoggy day. And we see some movement in the case group. You know, it changes, you know, almost 20% people switched over to the strongly agree category. We don't see as much movement in the control group. Likewise, for the question, smoke sticks to seats can be dangerous for your child, we see a big increase in the strongly agree category. So we are seeing some quantitative results. The pre-post for a behavioral question, this is the percentage of people who said they would never smoke in a car with a kid present. We do have a baseline of people, a certain number of people who say they would never do it anyway, but we see some movement in both the case and control. We see a little bit of movement towards people who would say they would never smoke in the car. But what was really compelling was a lot of the qualitative results we got. People had a very strong visceral emotional reaction, some people did, to the simulation. They would say things like, you know, as the smoke is going off and the child is really experiencing all these health effects, they would say, oh no, I can't do that. The poor baby's getting sick. That looks just like my baby, and I'm making her sick. And it really stuck with people over time, we found. This is qualitative, but we found that, you know, some people thought about the program constantly. One person said, you know, the dangers of secondhand smoke has become part of my world. So here's some more quotes, just to give you an idea. The program told me that smoke stays on the seats in the car. I didn't know any of that, that even with the windows down, the child is still very much affected with the smoke every time I'm in the car. Also, every time I see someone smoking in the car, I think about the little girl choking. Another quote, it made me feel that I was wrong in my habits. I instantly wanted to make a change. I even told some of my family members and friends to go look at it, especially those with children and who also smoke in the car. Now everyone doesn't smoke in the car, period. After I participated, I stopped smoking. So we had some good success with this. We had some good quantitative success. The baseline was sometimes higher than we you know, for secondhand smoke awareness, so it was hard to see some quantitative differences. But qualitatively, we can change people's perceptions and potentially their long-term behavior with this kind of approach. The challenges are doing a long-term study, getting people enrolled in the study and being able to look at those long-term term results, and especially with people, you know, we want to target people who do, you know, who don't necessarily have as much awareness. Those are the people who are most at risk. 2 minutes. So anyway, I kind of rushed through that, so I have some time, but I don't want to relax too much. But the next step here is, of course, to go on and do a larger study. What we want to do is integrate a lot more closely with providers and help look at the first 6 months or year of early life in the child and include smoking cessation in that as a specific endpoint. And a big thing is to involve, you know, families, to look at the whole family dynamic and understand, you know, how all the people in the family, smokers and non-smokers, can interact. And we can incorporate that into some kind of a simulation also. We got a couple grants, that should say TRDRP in California. We got an NIH STTR grant to do this. And I want to point out some of my co-authors, Linda and Charlotte, are here. And I'm going to have to leave. So if you have questions at the end, maybe, Linda, you can field some of those. Thank you. Thanks.